Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this: you're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more.
Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
They put the five-year-old kids in a room with one marshmallow, and then I think they did on like 600 kids. They told the kids, you can either have this one marshmallow now, or if you have enough self-control to not eat this marshmallow for 15 minutes and sit here with it,
yeah,
and you delay your gratification 15 minutes, if you can do that, then you know we'll reward you with two marshmallows. And one third of the kids were able to have enough self-control to delay their gratification for that second marshmallow. Mm-hmm. But then they followed those kids for 20, 30 years, and they found they were more successful based on a number of measures, whether it was higher SAT and ACT scores, got higher salaries, were more popular with their peers, had less drug and alcohol problems, were more healthy, lower BMIs, like every single thing. And, you know, they linked it to the trait of self-control. So I think the big takeaway for anyone, whether you're going through the educational system and trying to study, or you're an entrepreneur trying to work on a business, or you're a professional doing your day job, mm-hmm. one of the biggest takeaways is try to cultivate self-control.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Sean, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Srini. I appreciate it. I'm excited to spend some time together.
Yeah, it is my pleasure to have you here. So I came across your story by way of your publicist, and there was so much about it that I found interesting. I mean, the list of accolades, as I was saying before here, were really impressive. You know, one of my best friends from college always says, he's like, your sister is like every Indian parent's dream come true. And he's like, and my response was, I'm like every Indian parent's nightmare come true. and I think you fall into the every Indian parent's dream come true category, but we'll get into all of that. I want to start with, you know, just from what I knew about your background from having read about it, with what I think is a really fitting and relevant question. That is, where in the world did you grow up, and what impact did where you grew up end up having on the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
Yeah, it's actually very interesting. I had somewhat of a typical, or an atypical, I should say, upbringing for the average American, but in the same way, I've had somewhat of a typical upbringing for the average Indian American. And I say that because, you know, I grew up in a budget motel in Las Vegas, Nevada. So my parents, you know, like many immigrants and Indian Americans especially, they immigrated from the United States in the 80s, didn't really have much. And, you know, they were trying to build a life for themselves. And they ended up purchasing a motel in sort of the ghetto of Las Vegas. And, you know, when everyone thinks of Vegas, they think of all of the glitz and the glamour of the strip of Vegas, and they think it would be really fun. But, you know, this budget motel is kind of in the ghetto part of Vegas where no one really would want to go. And that was an interesting setting because we had on one side, like, a lot of gangs, drug dealers, police, prostitutes in the area that I was growing up. But on the other side, I had like your traditional Hindu, Indian, American family that valued education, religion, etc. And so, you know, as you know, young as 7, 8 years old, I was renting motel rooms and living in this sort of setting. And so it was interesting because I think it did inform a lot of what I do now and how I grew up and my view of the world. And I say that because, you know, as we all get into my story, you know, I am both a physician and an entrepreneur. So I sort of have a healthcare background and I have a entrepreneurial background. And growing up in a motel informed a lot of that because I watched my dad grow up doing the exact same thing. My dad was both a pharmacist as mm-hmm. well as a entrepreneur who owned the motel as well as the gas station that he eventually bought a couple doors down. I mean, It was like, you know, basically fitting every Indian stereotype. We owned a motel, we owned a gas station, I'm becoming a doctor. You know, it's like, yeah. There couldn't be more classic. And so that was interesting because my dad would wake up at 5 a.m. to go to the pharmacy to be there by 6 a.m. and he would work there till 2 p.m. Then he would come home, take a little break, work at the motel, or actually we worked at the gas station from like 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. Then come back to the motel and spend his last couple hours from 10 to 11 working at the motel. And, you know, he was just nonstop working 6 days a week. And I think, you know, people ask me like, why do you work so hard? How do you find the time to work on a business and be a doctor? And it's like, that was like sort of built into my upbringing and where I was growing up and who I was looking up to, which was my father, in that he was both a healthcare professional and an entrepreneur. And that kind of informed where I am and what I do today and my yeah. sort of worldview.
So, I mean, you're growing up with these two dramatic contrasts of, you know, like you said, gangs and prostitutes and drugs and all this stuff. And I can't imagine you just, you know, basically were sheltered from that completely, right? Like, did you have interactions with that part of your environment? And how in the world did you not succumb to it? And you know, what did you learn from people in those environments that most of us might have as misperceptions about their lives?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great question. One, I would say, is the biggest misperception that people have about people who live in poverty. I mean, because if you think about the budget motel that I was at, most of these people were not there because they wanted to be there. They were there because they had to be there. They didn't make enough money to have a steady income that they could pay a monthly lease at an apartment. They were living literally paycheck to paycheck, buying weekly room rentals at the motel, and that was like their home. And I'd say the biggest misconception that a lot of people have is that people live in this situation or in poverty because of their own choices. And it's really not that. They are born into an environment where everything is set up against them, whether it's the educational system, the family system, you know, the drugs that are around, et cetera, that they are literally forced into this situation of poverty. And poverty is not really a choice. It's really something that gets forced upon a lot of people, and it's really hard to dig yourself out of. In terms of your question on how did I avoid getting pulled into a lot of that, you know, I think one is definitely my family. I mean, my parents tried to shelter me as much as possible from this. Yeah. I think it was difficult because, you know, they weren't always around. Like I mentioned, my dad was often working. My mom was the same way. You know, she was often at the gas station. And so because they weren't around, you know, I would interact with people at the motel, you know, whether it was people that were actually in gangs or drug dealers or whatever, because I was renting rooms to them. Uh-huh. And so, you know, I think I learned very early on things that a typical 8-year-old or 10-year-old or 12-year-old wouldn't really understand or be exposed to. You know, I would see people renting motel rooms for like 2 hours with prostitutes. And I figured out quickly why people wanted hourlies and, you know, this kind of craziness that was going on. And it's like, you know, a 10-year-old shouldn't be exposed to that, but I certainly was. I think one thing I really realized was that education was so, so important, because I did notice that the one thing that would separate those living at the motel and those that I did see who were doing better in life, you know, a lot of my family friends, or my parents' friends who were doctors, lawyers, engineers, et cetera, was yeah. education. And so I think that really made a big difference to me, in that I knew that if I could just get a good education, didn't matter that I was, you know, in the worst school district in the nation. You know, Vegas is not the best place to get an education, because people grow up and you're in high school and the Bellagio, like one of the major casinos, will pay you $70,000 a year as a high school student to park valet cars, you know? So mm-hmm. it's like, why would you continue to go through college and high school? And so we have like a 40% dropout rate. Wow. But, you know, it was for me, at least, combination of seeing people with no education and seeing sort of the dire poverty that they were living in. Uh-huh. And then two was obviously the Indian American sort of mentality, and that education is super valuable. It's the gateway and the key to financial freedom and sort of increasing your quality of life. And I think that's instilled into a lot of us that are South Asian.
Absolutely.
So I think I don't know if you, go ahead.
I have a lot to say about that, but I want to come back to that because I think that this will be probably one of the most informative parts of our conversation. I think that what I wonder about is, what were your friendships like in this environment? I mean, you're still a kid. So, I mean, you went to school in this environment. What are the people that you went to school with? What are the people that you grew up with? Like, and are you still in touch with them? Like, what are their perceptions of your life now? Has the fact that you've gone out and done all these amazing things changed those relationships?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? So, I mentioned at the beginning that I had sort of a very typical Indian American background or upbringing. And I say that because a lot of my friendships growing up were with other kids whose parents owned or operated motels. And a lot of times that would be other Indian Americans. And so those were sort of my closest friends. And I say that because, you know, at school, I was so embarrassed to reveal that, you know, I lived in a motel. It's like a hard thing for a 8-year-old or a 10-year-old to reveal to their friends at school that, you know, I live in a motel room. And then you have to sort of explain why. And, you know, it's like, well, so do you rent motel rooms? Do you clean motel rooms? Do you do this? And it's like, you didn't want like the 21 questions, you know? So I would never really tell anyone where I lived. I wanted to be just like everyone else who lived in an apartment or a house, et cetera. So what ended up happening is I formed a very close bond to other kids who lived in a similar situation. So the kids in the motel next to me, the kids in the motel across the street. And we all sort of had this similar understanding of like, oh, I get it. Your parents also own or operate a motel. You do not necessarily fit into a demographic that lives in a motel weekly, like many of the people that, you know, rent rooms at our motels. But, you know, it wasn't anything that we had to explain, and we had this shared understanding. So in terms of, you know, I'd say most of my friends growing up were kids whose parents owned other motels, and they have also, you know, we were actually just talking about this when I was visiting home in Vegas a couple of weeks ago. They have all done amazingly well. There's something about being a motel kid that I think drives you to do well. Like, I mean, I've done well, but I mean, everyone has, like, they've become physicians, they become lawyers, they have, you know, started businesses. Everyone did really, really well. And, you know, everyone's kind of in their late 20s, early 30s now from my particular friend group. And I think there was a level of focus that we all had that we, I think we all actually kind of wanted to get out of that ghetto that we were living in. And now, I mean, most of our parents live in the suburbs. Very few of them still own the motel. And, you know, we would see our other Indian American friends who, you know, had these really nice houses in the suburbs, and their parents were usually doctors, engineers, you know, professionals. And so I think we sort of pursued a lot of those careers ourselves because we saw that and what was possible. I mean, we didn't like growing up in little motel rooms with, you know, roaches and rats and water leaks and electrical outages. Like, you know, that sucked. So, you know, we really have all done amazingly well. So I'd say I'm not the exception. I'm actually sort of the rule for motel kids.
Interesting. I want to come back to the education thing, because I know this is a huge part of what you do. I mean, and, you know, there are numerous reasons why I want to discuss this, because I'm not going to, you know, challenge the value of education, but I will challenge the structure of education in its current form. You know, like, it's like you said, you get a typical Indian American kid. We are encouraged to pursue an education, get good grades. It was, you know, we're not the kids whose parents put cards on, you know, report cards in the refrigerator when we didn't get A's. I remember having this conversation with my dad. It was like, you know, hey, there's a kid at school who gets a $5 for every A. He's like, yeah, you get a meal every night. This negotiation is over.
Yeah, and exactly.
It was like, okay. And the thing is that, you know, my ongoing joke is that I'm a failed byproduct of the education system. Now, the reason I say that is, you know, if you look at sort of my performance post high school, it was abysmal. And it wasn't that I wasn't smart. It wasn't that I was motivated, but I was just not smart in the context you needed to be to thrive in an academic environment. Mm-hmm. So with that being said, you know, there are a couple of things here that I really want to ask you about. One is, you know, what are your views on modern education? And particularly because you overcame some incredible odds, you know, from what I know, you like had just, we went from, I don't remember the exact numbers, but you went to like a perfect score on the SAT. And I think this is fascinating, particularly in wake of the college admission scandal. So I kind of wonder, you know, given your background, your perspective, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you've effectively crossed off the check boxes of like anybody who could get as high as you could get in the education system. So knowing all of that, what do you think about all this?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I love that you're challenging the entire educational system, the way it's set up, et cetera, because, you know, you're speaking to someone who you would think would really support the educational system.
Yeah.
And I say that because, you know, like you said, I raised my SAT score from average to perfect. I started a test prep company, which we, you know, my company Prep Expert, that's what we do for a living. We train students to improve their SAT and ACT scores. And then me personally, I mean, I've done just about more education than anyone can possibly do post high school. I did college at USC. I did medical school at USC. I did business school at Yale. So you would think that, you know, speaking to someone with my background, I would be a strong proponent of the educational system and the way that it's set up. And the opposite is could not be more true. Like basically, I do not think the way that education is currently set up is the right way to teach students. Uh-huh. I think that I have personally learned how to play the game, and I am playing within the rules and teaching other students how to play the game in order to be effective at it. But do I think that there needs to be a major paradigm shift? Yes, absolutely. I would say a lot of my education actually has come from outside of school. Mm-hmm. When I was in school, I mean, I would spark notes every book just like everyone else because I didn't like reading the books that were assigned. You know, most of the books that I read came after school or outside of school. All of the business books, the you know, books about self-improvement, et cetera. Like, you know, that's what I really enjoyed. And that's not really taught in school.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, like people are like, oh, you're, you know, you have a test preparation company.
Right.
You should definitely think that the SAT and ACT scores or ACT exams are good tests. And the truth is, I actually think they're terrible tests. You know, I actually think that the SAT and ACT score does not measure your intelligence in any kind of way. I hate people that say, well, you're smart because you got a perfect SAT score. That's not true. Yeah. All my SAT score tells you and all anyone's SAT or ACT score tells you is how much they prepared for that exam. Uh-huh. And I got a perfect SAT score because I prepared hundreds of hours for the SAT. And, you know, you may have gotten, like any student may get an average or below average SAT or ACT score. That doesn't mean they're not smart. That means they just didn't prepare, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think they're very, very poor tests in terms of measuring a student's IQ or intelligence. I think that they are necessary evils in the way the current educational system is set up. And that's why we teach students how to ace these SAT and ACT exams. Because look, I personally don't care as much about students getting into these brand name colleges like Harvard, mm-hmm. Stanford, Yale, et cetera. Yeah. I care more about students taking my Prep Expert course, improving their SAT and ACT scores so that they get half tuition
full tuition scholarships to, whether it's a state school, I don't care. I want them to reduce their college tuition burden so that they don't fall into the $1.5 trillion student debt crisis that we currently have in the educational system. So I think that's the larger problem to fix. Do I think, you know, do I think a college education is still important? I think in a lot of ways it is, because, you know, as an entrepreneur, I know how hard it is. Like, people, entrepreneurs will tell you, oh, you don't need a college. Like, I think Gary Vee and a bunch of other entrepreneurs will say, you don't need a college education. Like, that's not going to help you. Like, just be an entrepreneur. And it's like, that's not necessarily always going to work for everyone. Like, there's no way 99% or 100% of the population can all be entrepreneurs. Like, we do need, you know, employees and professionals, et cetera. And so, you know, I think that, and especially I think coming from the Indian American background, like, we play it safe. Like, I mean, or at least, like, it's instilled in our culture, like, you need to play it safe, you need to have a backup, et cetera. And, you know, I'm not the entrepreneur that went out there and risked it all and risked every single thing, you know, up for my business. I was, like, still in school. I was still in medical school, you know, while I was starting my business. So I'm not the risky entrepreneur or the risk taker entrepreneur that you would think of when you think of someone who starts a business. And do I think starting a business is a risk? Absolutely. But do I think you can mitigate it in a lot of ways, such as doing it while you're still getting an education, while you're still, you know, working towards whether it's being a professional or having a career? I think that's one of the best ways you can do it is do it as a side hustle. Cause look at technology now, like, you know, we're doing this podcast at night. It's amazing, that you're able to, you know, connect through technology at any time with anyone. You're in the West Coast, I'm on the East Coast. Like, that was never possible 20 years ago. And that's why I think having side hustles and being an entrepreneur is easier than ever because of the way that technology connects us all.
Yeah. So, you know, it's funny to think about, you know, this with you particularly, because I think you and I are sort of polar opposites in terms of how you come out of the system. Like, I was one of those people who got bad SAT scores, but I think I was really lucky in that I preceded that period in which the standards of the UC system just skyrocketed, right? Like, me and my sister always joke, we're like, yeah, there's no way in hell we'd get it. We both went to Berkeley, which is, you know, arguably the best of the UCs. And We look at our scores and we're like, yeah, we wouldn't have gotten in now. Like, we had the grades. And my sister was really bad at MCATs as well. But she ended up absolutely killing it when she got into med school. Like, she was the chief anesthesiology resident at Yale. So, you know, like, it was kind of insane to see that the test scores made virtually no difference in terms of how she showed up after that. So, you know, the thing that I wonder, you know, you brought up two things. You said it yourself, despite owning a test prep company, these aren't good barometers of somebody's intelligence. Do you believe that enough that you would be willing to forego your business if it meant they got rid of the test? Like, would you be, because, you know, that would effectively, if neither of those tests existed, you'd have no business. Now, that's, you know, a question that out of curiosity.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a great question because, you know, everyone asks me that. They say, well, you know, a lot of colleges are now foregoing the SAT and ACT and standardized testing for the admission requirement. And, you know, what's interesting and what every single person misses with this big news story that's happened is that those same schools, like, if you look at George Washington University, for example, that, you know, is a good university that does no longer requires the SAT or the ACT for admission, is they still give merit-based scholarships based off your SAT and ACT score. So if you forego those tests, you could be forgoing $10,000, $20,000 a year in scholarships, all because, like, you chose not to play the game or to play the system. So do I think that, you know, I think one, so I think there's two things here. One is, it's not really fixing the issue because, like I said, what's more important than admission to me is paying for college. And so it's not really getting fixed by just removing the SAT and ACT for the admission requirement, because you still have to give, I mean, they're still giving out billions of dollars in scholarships based on SAT and ACT scores. And then the second part of it is, you know, you asked me, would I forego or would I be okay no longer having a business if they no longer require the SAT and ACT? In a way, yes. But at the same time, I think the bigger question is, can they ever make college admissions fair? Yeah. And, you know, that is really difficult to do because even if you get rid of the SAT and the ACT, there are so many things, as you mentioned before about like the college admission scandal, there are so many things that are wrong with the process that make it unfair, mm-hmm. that favor the wealthy, that, you know, the SAT and ACT are just one small part of that.
Yeah.
That, you know, I think there has to be an entire revamp as to how we look at education. And one of those things is kind of what I mentioned before, which is people need to stop being so obsessed with these name brand schools. Like, you know, you and I went to great schools, USC, UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
And the problem is there are limited seats. And as you said, it's becoming hyper competitive and people are going to extreme, extreme lengths now to go to these schools and many others that, you know, I talk about colleges are the ultimate name brand luxury marketers. Like you think Gucci and Louis Vuitton are good. Like, oh my God, like look at Harvard and Stanford and Yale, like they're charging kids $60,000 a year all for to have, you know, Stanford at the top of their degree. It's crazy. So like people need to be less obsessed with the name of the school and more okay with like this person got a college education, they went to a state college, they chose that because it was the right thing to do to avoid going into debt, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like that's a smart financial decision. That's smart. Like I respect the person that does that. You know,
I mean, I didn't, I went back and did it when I was younger. I'd be like, you know what? I would have told my dad, I'm like, you know what? I'm like, you're right. I'll stay here and go to UCR. I'll leave home. You know, I completely agree on that.
Yeah. So like, and you know, I used to talk way more about like, you know, you should try to go to these top schools, et cetera. Like that's what your SAT and ACT score can do for you. And I've had a paradigm shift in the way I think about these tests. And what I think is really important is that it's more about paying for college now than it is about trying to go to the best one. Because at the end of the day, a economics class at your community college and an economics class at Harvard are not going to be that much different in curriculum. You know, you're still going to learn basic economics 101. Right. So that's kind of my opinion on it.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Yeah, you know, it's funny to hear you say that, because you're right. Like, we think about it from the standpoint of privilege, and it's like a really rigged game. And as you were saying that, I kept thinking to myself, you know, it's like, well, let's not kid each other. We grew up in Indian families that were incredibly nurturing and also drilled this notion into our heads from the time we were kids. That's a pretty significant advantage, wouldn't you say? Like, even if we didn't grow up with wealth, like, my dad's a college professor. Talk about, you know, instant access, like an edge in terms of this process. You know, I mean, my dad is a byproduct of this system. And, you know, we have this argument constantly about the value of, you know, formal education. But even he now tells his PhD students, he's like, unless you want to be a professor, don't do a PhD.
But really?
I appreciate that you brought up, you know, sort of the privilege and the fact that it's not just about the test, but there's so many other dynamics here at play. And I think you're right. You know, it's funny, we had a guy named Scott Galloway here a few weeks back. You know, he's a professor at NYU, also happened to go to UCLA, you know, started multiple companies. And he said the exact same thing about colleges. He said colleges are no longer educational institutions, they're luxury brands.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't be more true, right? Because if you think about it now, like with the internet and open education, you can get any information, you can get almost any class now. Like most, I think every class at MIT is available for free online.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like you're getting a huge advantage by going to one school over the other. All that education, all that information is out there. So, you know, why spend so much time, so much money, so much effort trying to go to some of these name brand schools that are just luxury brands when it doesn't tell you much about the person, right? I think it's more important that the person made a smart financial decision. You know, hopefully that they were able to go to college for either cheap or free because they went to a state school or they got scholarships to go to a better school, et cetera. So, you know, I think that is more telling of the person. And then after that, what did they do with that education? And are they, you know, still learning? Are they still reading on their own? Are they, you know, continually trying to improve and get better? Because now with so much education online, there's no excuse not to. Like, you don't need to be at a university to be a student.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that makes a really a perfect segue to talking about, it's ironic, but I think part of the reason I wanted to have this conversation with you was it wasn't about increasing your SAT score, but more importantly, I wanted to understand, you know, what you learned from that process that you've applied going forward and what our listeners could take away from that about how to learn something. And I'm curious if that applies in this case. And then, you know, how in the world you did this on the side of med school, and we'll get to that. I'm very curious about your interactions on Shark Tank and Mark Cuban and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of what I think is important or what was really helpful in terms of the process of improving my SAT score is that it taught me a lot of self-control.
You know, like I spent an entire summer locked up in a library between my junior and senior year studying for the SAT. And as a 16, 17 year old who, you know, there were plenty of parties going on, there were plenty of things to do in the summer with friends. And for me to, you know, lock myself in the library for 8 hours a day, put away all the technology that there was, is it sort of cultivated in me a lot of self-control. And I think as an entrepreneur, that has been super, super helpful in bringing about incredible productivity and incredible success. Like, you know, there's this famous Stanford marshmallow experiment about how they put the five-year-old kids in a room with one marshmallow. And then, you know, I think they did on like 600 kids. They told the kids, you know, you can either have this one marshmallow now, or if you have enough self-control to not eat this marshmallow for 15 minutes and sit here with it, and you delay your gratification 15 minutes, if you can do that, then, you know, we'll reward you with two marshmallows. And like one third of the kids were able to have enough self-control to delay their gratification for that second marshmallow. But then they followed those kids for 20, 30 years, and they found they were more successful based on a number of measures, whether it was got higher SAT and ACT scores, got higher salaries, were more popular with their peers, had less drug and alcohol problems, were more healthy, lower BMIs, like every single thing. And, you know, they linked it to the trait of self-control. So I think the big takeaway for anyone, whether you're going through the educational system and trying to study, or you're an entrepreneur trying to work on a business, or you're a professional doing your day job, like one of the biggest takeaways is like try to cultivate self-control. And I do that still on a daily basis as an entrepreneur. You know, for example, I will go to my office and I will leave my phone in a completely different room. And, you know, I do that on purpose because these, you know, these little gadgets we have in our hands every single day, like they are built to destroy self-control. Like they are built to notify and buzz you all day long about the newest Instagram post or like or Facebook or whatever it may be, or text message, and they destroy all self-control. Like, you know, everyone's in group chats now and you're getting like 80 group chat messages. Like there's no way you can be super productive. And you mentioned like at the very beginning that, you know, you listen to music and you write. And I'm sure that like you had the same experiences, like getting rid of a lot of the daily distractions helps you write so much better. Like it's incredible how much you can, you know, like write and get your thoughts down on paper when you don't have your freaking phone buzzing every single minute. You know, it's just huge, and people need to be able to get like basically pull themselves away from their phones, their technology. I'll often turn off my internet, so I'm not even checking email, because email is another thing that like you love. It's like a slot machine. You keep refreshing your email to see like what's the newest email coming in, you know? And people think they're being productive because they're on email, but really you're not doing anything. You know? And so I would say that's a huge, huge takeaway, is like try to cultivate that self-control to be successful either as a student or as a business person.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because this is something that I struggled my whole life. And you know, it's funny because you're right. I listen to music and usually I have my phone in the room. And today was one of those days where it just all kind of unraveled from the moment I woke up, because I had a bunch of, you know, people that, you know, wanted to have external meetings with me. You know, like, you know, one of our new sponsors, you know, which you guys will have heard by now, is called Brain.fm. And if you haven't checked it out, you can check it out at, you know, brain.fm/Srini. And I use it because it works really, really well for focus. But the funny thing is that because I had to talk to them this morning, I didn't get to focus for as long as I wanted to, ironically. But it's one of those things where I always tell people, if you start your day this way, you're hosed. Like that is, you know, one of those things where it really is, you're right. I mean, this is, discipline is one of those things, and self-control, I think people underestimate the impact of that, because you don't see the effect of it. Like when you do it one day, you may not see the effect of it when you do it 2-3 days, but you do that for 2 or 3 weeks, and suddenly you start to get very clear that, wait a minute, there is like a serious effect by doing this.
Yeah, it's the secret to like productivity, getting it done in the morning, avoiding like people try, like there are so many things now trying to steal your time and steal your attention, whether it's an app, an email, a phone call, a person. Like you need to figure out how to say no to all those things and get back your time, get back your attention so you can be that productive member. Whether it's a school or business or entrepreneurship venture that you're working on.
Yeah. So that can't possibly be the only thing that got you from like average score to 1600.
No. So there, I mean, there are a lot of interesting strategies and tactics that we, you know, teach at the Prep Expert courses based on my own experience. Like for example, you know, when I was in the library studying for the SAT, like one thing I noticed was I basically was able to write almost the exact same essay, no matter what SAT essay topic that would come up. You know, a lot of the sentences were the same. I would start the introduction out the same. I would change the thesis a little bit, but like the intro or the first, second, third paragraphs all had the same like topic sentences and end sentences. And so I basically created like a template that would get me a perfect score on the SAT essay every single time. And so like that would be an example of a strategy that we teach at Prep Expert to help students improve their essay scores. And we make it very formulaic and very simple. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think the reason I mentioned self-control is it's actually applicable to the real world. Like an essay template is not going to help you, you know, like as an entrepreneur, et cetera.
Well, I think the template thing is actually fascinating though, because an essay template might not, but I mean, if you think about anybody who's like super productive and they just produce a large volume of work and they get a lot of stuff done, there's a template to how they do everything. A template is, and part of the reason I think a template is valuable for these kinds of things is that it lowers your sort of cognitive load because you're not focused on, you know, all the mechanics of it. All that energy goes into the actual creative work, right? When you do that, mm-hmm. you're not having to think about like, even, you know, when we do a podcast, like all this stuff, you know, sort of, it's already been decided how we produce a podcast. Like I already know everything that needs to happen. So that the bulk of my energy doesn't get put into like the minutia surrounding it, gets put into the conversation. And I think that's one of those things where, you know, I think for creativity, like you have to have systems because, and it seems so counter to, you know, what people think of as creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, definitely for writing, it's a great thing. Like, you know, I've written books before and, you know, the reason I'm able to get it done is I'm not trying to think of new content in a new format to write it every single day. Like I had a very formulaic way that I wrote my first SAT prep book, which was, I was like, okay, I'm going to write the strategy. Then I'm going to show an example. So it was like strategy, example, show, write practice problems using that strategy. And then finally like review points. So like, so I just did that 100 times and all of a sudden I had 100 strategies with 100 examples with, you know, hundreds of practice. So it was all like very formulaic. And then all of a sudden I had a 400 page book, you know, about SAT. And it was like, it didn't come all, you know, people think about like writing as this very arduous divine inspiration. Yeah. It's like, you know, it wasn't like that. It's like each day I was like, okay, I'm just going to write this exact template out. Mm-hmm. And it worked really well. You're so right with, in terms of writing, if you can take away that staring at a blank page, you know, every single day, like that's the fear that I think everyone has when it comes to writing is like that white blank page. It by formulaically creating a way that you're going to format and template your writing, it can make you so much more productive and you know, your writing so much easier to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's do this. I really want to talk briefly about the Shark Tank experience. I mean, you know, you've gotten Mark Cuban as an investor, which I think the funniest thing I ever heard Mark Cuban say was in an interview with Chase Jarvis. He said, you should avoid taking other people's money at all costs. And I never forgot that, but I'm curious, like, you know, what have you learned from working with somebody like Mark Cuban that has informed, you know, how you do what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Mark is definitely the best shark to get on Shark Tank. And I say that, you know, for a couple of reasons. One is obviously I made a deal with Mark for an investment in my company. But that more seriously is that, you know, when you make a deal with Mark Cuban, you get two things. You get one, access directly to Mark Cuban as a business advisor. And two is access to the entire like Mark Cuban company's team. So whether it's working with their business development team, their technology team, their accounting team, you know, their lawyers, et cetera. Like there's just so many resources at your fingertips as a company in the Mark Cuban company's portfolio. You know, and everyone asked me like, what has Mark Cuban, you know, really done for your business? And I will say one thing, you know, he's done some very practical things. One is, you know, he was able to double our licensing fee on our SAT and ACT courses to our biggest licensor of courses. And so that was huge. I mean, that was worth a few hundred thousand dollars in revenue immediately. Like that had an immediate impact. Yeah. But more importantly is, you know, he's really taught me a couple of things as an entrepreneur. One is the power of saying no. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're a billionaire like Mark Cuban and you have hundreds of investments, I am sure that, you know, people are trying to get him to do things, to get his time and attention, as we talked about, all day long, every day. And, you know, for me, I have a problem. I always say yes. You know, like I'm always like, yeah, sure, I'll do that. And like this person's like, can we hop on the call to do this? And like Mark is the exact opposite of that. Like he says no, I would say 80% of the time. And 20% of the time, he says yes. And it's for the right things. Like 80% of the time, like he's not hopping on the phone call like with most entrepreneurs. And that's such a smart thing. He'd rather respond to 1,000 emails a day so he can be way more productive than sit on a 30-minute or hour-long phone call with one entrepreneur, right? Mm-hmm. So he says no a lot, but he says yes to the right things. You know, for example, I mentioned that we were writing a book about entrepreneurship for kids, and Mark was like, I would love to be involved. I'll help co-author it. I really believe in the mission of teaching kids to be entrepreneurs and start businesses early. And so, you know, that was super cool because he said yes to like co-authoring a book with me. That was awesome. He'll say yes to filming Shark Tank updates. He'll say yes to all kinds of things that really mean a lot. Like, for example, just tweeting out huge promotions that we're doing to his 8 million followers, but like he won't do it on little things. So like you have to say yes to the right things and know a lot. Like, I mean, there's a lot of books on this, right? Yeah. The Power of Saying No, et cetera. And this is kind of what I'm talking about is like, he's really good at not letting other people steal his time or steal his attention. And I think I need to be better about that. And, you know, like I think I'm too nice sometimes, but it's interesting. I did an event with Mark Cuban just 2 weeks ago when we filmed the Shark Tank update. Yeah. And, you know, he was talking about, you know, the nice works in business. And I think you still have to be nice, but you can be nice and still say no. Yeah. You know, you can say, you know, I'm just a little too busy right now, but maybe at a later date, et cetera. Because I think nowadays it is just too easy to say yes to everything and then get overloaded and then people get burned out, et cetera. And, you know, I think now I say yes to the right things a little bit more often, like doing this podcast.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's funny you say that because like I probably mentioned this on air before. Like I'm always amused at, you know, Dan Kennedy, the copywriter, he says he has a sort of default rule for how he filters his email. And he's like, is this a person who's trying to give me money or is this a person who's trying to get me to do something? And that literally is how he categorizes it. And I was like, that's, you know, borderline obnoxious. But I realized that, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that comes in your inbox and you're like, yeah, you know, is this, you know, to serve, you know, my needs at the moment? And it's not about being selfish. And I noticed that with a lot of people, like you look at people like Seth Godin, like he's very clear, like he has boundaries where it's like, yeah, these are the things that I say yes to. And I think one of his, because he's Seth, is like, if I have to travel outside of New York, this, you know, speaking fee is like four times as much.
Yeah, Seth is amazing. I mean, like I said, that a lot of the education I got after school, and a lot of them were like Seth's books, you know, like The Purple Cow is amazing. Like the product is your marketing. I mean, he's just, you know, an incredible, incredible marketer and entrepreneur. But yeah, I always wonder that, like, and having now interacted with Mark for a number of years is like how luminaries in business are able to filter what to say yes and what to say no to. And I think over time you get really good at it. And I'm sure Seth and Mark are two people that are probably masters at it.
Yeah, no doubt. Wow. So I have two sort of final questions for you about this. At this point, you're a doctor, you've got this successful business, you've worked with Mark Cuban. You also grew up in a situation where you saw what it's like not to have money. What has this done for your own perspective on money and wealth?
That is a great question. Yeah. I think that as an entrepreneur who was bootstrapping and didn't have really anything when I was first starting, I started my business with $900 of scholarship money that I had left over. We had the 25 grand in revenue the first year. I was always so focused on revenue, profit, building wealth. And what I've realized now, having a business that makes multiple millions of dollars in revenue now, and we're very profitable and doing well, is that money can only take you so far. And I know that sounds cliche, but people are like, well, why do you still do dermatology residency? And the answer is, I don't have to. I certainly could just do my business and I would be happy. But at the same time, I love dermatology. And so you have to find your passions and what you love to do day in and day out. And for me, that is my passion is not necessarily I want to do dermatology 80 hours a week. I think my passion is to do something different every single day. I think the spice of life comes from diversity. Mm-hmm. And so people are like, well, how would you see yourself doing both? And it's like, I would love to spend a day or 2 days a week in dermatology clinic, a day doing prep expert, my entrepreneur business, a day investing, a day, doing a new venture. And if I'm doing something new every single day, I think that will keep my career and life interesting. Mm-hmm. And that is way, way more important than the amount of money that these ventures or things are making. And I think as long as you're doing things that you are good at, and I'm the first person to say, I think passion is a little overrated, honestly. Mm-hmm. People say follow your passion. Mark says follow your effort, and I say follow what you're good at. Yeah. Follow the things that you've put the 10,000 hours in to become an expert at, and no doubt you will be successful if you do that. And so follow the things that you're really good at and do those amazingly well, and you'll find yourself differentiating from the rest and becoming very successful, wealthy, etc.
Awesome. So I have one final question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
I think that what makes someone unmistakable is being a master at their craft. I think it goes back to what we were just talking about, which is Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours from Outliers. I think if you want to be unmistakable in your craft, in your business, in your professional career, you have to put in those 10,000 hours to become an expert and really to become unmistakable. I mean, you mentioned your sister was a chief resident in anesthesiology. I think that's what makes her unmistakable. She put in those 10,000 hours to become that expert anesthesiologist. And that's why I still do dermatology, is to put in those 10,000 hours to become an absolute expert in the field of skin healthcare. And, I think you have to put in the effort, the hours, to become an absolute expert in your field, because everyone asks me what is the business that I should start? And I think that's the wrong question to start with. Mm-hmm. I think the right question is, what are you really good at? What have you spent 10,000 hours learning to start a business in? Everyone will hear these buzzwords like cryptocurrency, artificial intelligence, neural networks, and they'll be like, okay, yeah, I should do a business in that. But they don't know the first thing about it. And so if you want to become unmistakable in those fields, you got to put in the 10,000 hours, or at least a few hundred hours to start with, or at least 1,000 hours to really become a master at those fields, unmistakable. And then you will have nothing but success if you put in those hours and you put in that effort to become that master and to become unmistakable.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story and your insights with our listeners. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything that you're up to?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, if people are interested or they have kids who are taking the SAT and the ACT, definitely check out our courses at prepexpert.com. And if people that are interested in self-improvement, sort of some of the success strategies that I've used to build up my own career in business, check out my book, Self-Made Success. It's 48 Secret Strategies to Become Healthier, Wealthier, and Happier.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this, AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The Four Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.